Its mood dims. That Dave Yarnett's a lying scoundrel. Wigwams for kiddies, weren't they? No bloody good for us. He shakes his head dismally, then brightens. So, are you offering Katie a job?
It's only an interview, I put in quickly. If you can spare her for an afternoon, says Demeter, eyeing my ensemble of jeans and factory shop T-shirt. Have you got an outfit?
You mean now? The truth dawns on me. We're going now. After lunch, says Alex firmly. Biddy put us both down for the full Somerset farmhouse blowout.
But my clothes. I'm trying to think what I've got that's clean and ironed. Then I put my hands to my head. My hair!
Nothing a quick blow-dry won't sort out. Although, Demeter peers more closely.
Katie, what's going on with your colour?
Oh, that, I chew my lip.
Well, I wanted to get rid of the blue, so I went for a chestnut rinse, only I can hardly bear to admit the truth. It was a knock-off pack of dye from Dave Yarnett.
No, says Alex in mock horror.
I know, what was I thinking? But he was round here and he had the boxes in his car, so... And there wasn't enough stuff in the packet to cover all my hair. Is it really bad?
Not really bad, but... Demeter hesitates diplomatically.
Maybe you should touch it up.
Then she gives me an odd little smile.
I'll do it, if you like.
It's a pretty intimate thing, doing someone's hair. It's certainly an icebreaker. As Demeter brushes the dye onto my hair, we chat like old, close friends. I tell her about the evening I spent with Dad last week, looking over old photos. There were pictures of Mum that I'd never seen, images of my childhood I'd completely forgotten. Biddy hovered by the stove for a while, busying herself with pans, as though she was too diffident to join in. But then I summoned her to look at a picture of me on a donkey at the seaside, and patted the chair beside me. We spent the rest of the evening, all three of us, leafing through the photographs, listening to Dad reminisce, and I felt more like we were a proper family than I ever had before. Then Demeter tells me all about James starting his big job in Brussels. The first night I was really lonely, she says with a grimace. We have a very large bed, you know, custom-made French oak, actually. And when only one of us is in it, well, she exhales, it's a big old empty bed.
I bet, I say, biting my lip at the custom-made French oak bed. I almost want to ask, is the oak organic? But I hold my tongue. Demeter's unbending to me here, and it's nice.
So, the next night, I did it differently, Demeter continues. I piled a whole lot of cushions on the bed, and I let our new puppy sleep there too. He's not supposed to go upstairs. And it was fine.
What's James going to say about the puppy? I can't help asking.
He'll be furious, she gives me a sparky grin in the mirror. Well, he shouldn't have gone to Brussels.
She seems far lighter in spirits than usual. Her brow is less drawn. She hasn't looked swivelly-eyed once. Her life seems manageable and enjoyable, even with James away. She seems like a different Demeter. And I find myself thinking, maybe the Demeter I got to know wasn't ever the real her. It was the stressed-out, beleaguered, victim-of-bullying version of Demeter. Maybe this confident, happy woman is the real Demeter. This is who Alex headhunted. This is who she was meant to be all the time. When the dye is done, it's magic and been rinsed out. We set up a blow-drying station in front of my dressing table mirror. Demeter wields the hairdryer and sprays products randomly into my hair while I tell her about my life in London. My real life in London. The flat in Catford, the hammock and Alan's boxes of whey, shopping with Flora and panicking about money and being mistaken for a homeless person. We both end up in fits of laughter, and I remember thinking, all that time ago, can Demeter laugh? Well, yes, she can, when there's something to laugh about. But then she becomes more thoughtful. I looked at your old Instagram feed, she says, and I feel the colour rush to my face. I haven't posted anything on my personal Instagram page for months. You projected quite a different image there.
Well, I shrug. You know, that's Instagram for you.
Fair enough, she nods. Everything's hype and spin. But you can't believe it all. Not of yourself. And not of other people. Her eyes flick to me and away again. I know what she means. She means, why did you believe my hype when you knew your own hype was all fiction? And it's a fair point. I've had time to reflect about this, and I think I believed it because I wanted to believe it so badly. I wanted London to be full of perfect princesses like Demeter, living their perfect princess lives. So, this interview, I say, meeting her eyes in the mirror. What do I say? Just be yourself, says Demeter at once. Nothing to worry about. Alex and I know you're brilliant already. We just need Adrian to see it for himself, which he will. That's easy for you to say. I'm actually quite nervous about it. Okay, full disclosure, I'm petrified. I'll tell you something, Katie, says Demeter, playing with the hairdryer cord. I got back to work, and I missed you. I wanted to consult you about stuff. I wanted you to be there. I missed you too, I admit. And it's true. I missed her voice. Her opinionated, annoying, dynamic voice. No one attacks life quite like Demeter. Okay, serum, Demeter starts squirting the serum onto her fingers. Now, the trick to serum is the touch, she adds in her usual show-offy way. Demeter, I roll my eyes, what do you know about hairdressing? Nothing, she says without blinking. She flicks at my hair a few times. There. Brilliant, no? I can't help smiling back. It's perfect. Thank you. Let's go. And it's only as we reach the door that I ask the question that's been humming round my brain, but I haven't quite dared ask. So, am I being interviewed for my old job? Everything's changed, says Demeter after a slight pause. So, not exactly. I feel a sudden plunge in spirits, which I try to conceal. She's not going to offer me some crappy unpaid internship, is she? She wouldn't do that. She wouldn't. It's pretty much the same level, though. Somehow I manage to sound light and nonchalant. But Demeter is searching for something in her bag and doesn't seem to hear the question. Come on, she says, raising her head. Time's ticking. Let's go. We don't talk about the job at all throughout lunch. Farewell to Dad and Biddy and the journey up to London. Alex tells outrageous stories about his childhood, and Demeter takes several work calls on the car speakerphone, and then both of them want to know how the glamping business is going. By 4 o'clock, we're in W6. By 4:30, I'm sitting outside Adrian's office, trying to remember all the branding jargon I ever knew. By 5 o'clock, I'm sitting in Adrian's office, my nerves shredded, as he and Demeter leaf through my portfolio. Adrian has this calm, unhurried demeanor about him, and he's examining everything carefully. I like this, he says occasionally, pointing to a page, and Demeter nods, and I open my mouth, then close it again. I'm actually quite glad of the respite. My last interview wasn't anything like this. It wasn't nearly so intense. Adrian's already grilled me on a million different topics, some really technical, and I feel a bit battered. I keep rerunning my answers, thinking, did I tackle the logo question right? Should I have voiced more views on the Fresh and Breezy rebrand? Am I using the phrase design DNA too much? Is that possible? And now there's this ominous silence as they both pass judgment on my work. I feel as though I might be sick from nerves, from anticipation, from hope. So, Adrian suddenly looks up, making me jump. Demeter tells me that in the time since you left us, you've set up a business from scratch. He pulls out the brochure from where it's got hidden underneath my portfolio. I've seen this. It's good, he nods. And you can pitch? Katie can bullshit like no one else, says Demeter. I was convinced you'd been to every top restaurant in London, she winks at me. And I've seen her think on her feet. She's like lightning. As you know, we're rebuilding our staff levels right now, continues Adrian. But we're not there yet. It's going to be hard work meanwhile. You up for that?
Absolutely, I say, trying not to gabble. Of course.
And you can manage a team? He regards me intensely, as though this is the most important question of all.
Through my head flashes, why is he asking that?
But I don't let it distract me. I just answer as professionally as I can.
Yes, I nod. I've managed and trained the staff at the farm. I've managed vacationers. I'm good with people.
Believe me, says Demeter with feeling. She can make people do things they don't want to do. This girl can manage a team. Well then, Adrian surveys my portfolio again, then looks up at me, his craggy face easing into a smile. It's a yes. Welcome back, Katie. We'll sort out a package that I think you'll like.
Package? That means an almighty relief crashes over me. It's paid.
It's a paid job. This entire interview, I haven't liked to ask, but it's paid. Thank God. Thank God.
It's a yes. Demeter looks at him alertly. But is it a yes yes?
Clearly she's using some code that only Adrian will understand. It's a yes yes. Adrian nods at her. No doubt about that. Demeter looks ecstatic.
Good decision, she says. Then she leans over to hug me so tightly that I gasp. Well done, Katie. Her voice is strangely constricted, as if some emotion is spilling out. I'm so proud.
Thanks. As she releases me, I rub my nose, still feeling puzzled.
But I don't get... Why did you ask about managing a team? A research associate doesn't manage a team.
No, says Demeter, and she looks at me fondly.
But a creative director does.
I'm in shock. Creative director. Creative director.
I'm sitting in Demeter's office, holding a cup of tea, but not daring to drink from it in case I drop it.
Creative director. Me, Katie Brenner.
You have no idea how hard I've been pushing for this, says Demeter, who's striding around her office and seems almost more pumped than I am.
I knew you had the potential, but I had to work on Adrian. She shakes her head dismissively. Men, so narrow-minded. I told him, this is the girl we should have kept. We should have fired all the others. Well, we did fire all the others, she adds, as though in an afterthought.
I still can't believe it, I say. Are you sure? I mean,
can I do this?
Of course you can, says Demeter airily.
You'll report straight to me, and I'll teach you everything. You're quick, and you have the right instincts. That's the main thing. That's what can't be taught.
It'll go perfectly. The pair of us, working in tandem. I know it will.
You'll be a second me.
I can't help laughing, Demeter. No one could be a second you.
I'm going to train you up. She shoots me a glinting look.
Then you can start going to a few industry events on my behalf, and I'll stay at home with Coco and Hal.
Sounds good. I try to conceal my totally uncool excitement.
Industry events.
I think I need a bit of space in my life for other stuff, says Demeter.
Family. My children.
I wander over to her pinboard and gaze at the familiar collage of Demeter images. Career success, family success, general coolness. Then I notice a new set of photos, which make me blink. It's the whole family at Anster's farm. There's Demeter and James by their yurt, holding champagne glasses as bunting flutters behind them in the breeze. There's Coco sitting on a hay bale, looking like a catalogue ad with her endless tan legs. There's Hal, lolling against the gate, grinning at a curious cow. You'd look at those pictures and you'd think, well, there's a family with not a care in the world. At least other people might think that. But not me. Not anymore.
Hey, a voice at the door makes us both turn, and it's Alex, beaming at me.
I've been pacing the floor, he complains to Demeter. You could have told me the news. Well done, Katie. Welcome back to Cooper Clemeau. Thanks. Oh, God, I have a sudden thought. I'll have to tell Broth I can't take their job. In your face, Broth, says Alex emphatically, making me laugh again. Don't worry, he adds, as he sees my guilty expression. Just think, some other lucky person will get that job now. It's a win-win. I can't help picturing some desperate job-seeking person like me, sitting on their bed with their hammock strung above, feeling desolate, then getting a call and hearing the wonderful news. Alex is right. It's a win-win. So, he glances meaningfully at Demeter. Give us a minute. This is my office, says Demeter, rolling her eyes. 1 minute. She heads past him through the door. Alex closes it, and we're alone. Good day, his eyes spark at me. Really good day. Well, you deserve it, Katie Brenner, of all people. Come here. He envelops me in a hug. Within about 10 seconds, we're kissing, and I'm lost. I'm jelly. No, I cannot be jelly in the office. Stop! I pull away, my voice blurry. I'll get fired before I begin. You're delicious, you know that. He strokes my hair. So are you. His hand is touching mine, playing with my fingers. I can't stop smiling up at him. And I think I've never felt as blissful as I do right now. You've done a lot for me, Katie, Alex says, breaking the quiet. Do you know that? Same goes. No, he shakes his head. You don't understand. You got to me. You made me think about stuff.
Oh, right. What stuff?
What you have in Somerset. Your setup. Your moss.
My moss?
I give a little laugh. Biddy, your dad, the farm. He spreads his arms. Moss, moss, moss. I want moss. As he looks at me, I realize he's not joking. He's deadly serious. I had the shittiest upbringing for moss. A tiny spasm runs across his face, as though he's trying to dodge the memory. But it's not too late, is it?
No, of course it isn't. You just have to...
I pause, feeling as if I'm treading on eggshells.
Decide to stay. To commit. To reach out to people and be with them and, well, let them turn into your moss.
There's silence. Alex is gazing at my face, his brow furrowed, as though he's trying to learn something very difficult and impenetrable from me. You're right, he says abruptly. I run. I always fucking run. Well, I'm not running anymore. I want stability. I want love, he adds, and I feel a tiny frisson as he says the word. You know, long-term proper love? I mean, that's what it's all about, isn't it?
Well, I think so.
I feel a kind of spreading joy inside me.
I think you'll be happy that way, and so,
I hesitate,
so will the people you love.
There's a taut silence between us. His dark eyes are still searching my face. He's never seemed so intense. I agree, he says softly. I have a whole new outlook. I'm committing. This is it. He bangs his fist in the other hand as though inspired. I'm going to New York.
What? Did I hear that right?
I'm going to find my dad, he says with sudden passion, because I've ignored him, I've hated him. And that's all wrong, isn't it? I mean, we're in the same field. Maybe we should try working together.
You're going to live in New York?
I'm so crestfallen, my voice breaks. Not sure yet. All I know is, I want the same relationship as you have with your dad. Maybe we are both tricksy sods, but shouldn't we at least try? But I'm still struggling to take in this hammer blow.
What about your job?
Oh, Cooper Clemeau need me back in New York next week, he says as though this is some minor consideration. American Electrics want me back on their rebrand, not in the role I'm in at the moment, he adds firmly. Forget that.
I realize I'm not cut out to be a manager. But what I can do is create, and I want to create a whole new life. A family-based life. Stable. Forever.
He falls silent. Somehow I manage an encouraging smile, even though there's a hot, looming sadness in my head. I thought... No. Stop. It doesn't matter what I thought. Wow. New York. I mean, that's... I break off, my voice not quite steady. It's a great idea.
It is, right? Alex nods eagerly. And it was you who gave me that idea.
Great, I say shrilly. I'm so pleased. The more brightly I talk, the tighter my throat feels and the harder I have to blink. I'm in shock. I hadn't realized. I did let him into my heart. I did. I didn't even know I was doing it. But somehow, there he is, wrapped up with everything that I love. Suddenly I noticed Demeter watching us from the open doorway. She must have arrived back a while ago because I can tell from her expression that she's heard. And although she says nothing, I can hear her voice in my head, clear as a bell. One way, Alex, never touches the same ground twice. A lot of broken hearts. Don't get smitten. Protect yourself. Protect myself. I can feel my mental armies springing into action. I can feel every self-defensive instinct waking up. Because here's the thing I need to remember. Life is good at the moment, and I'm not about to blight it by pining after a man. I'm not about to hope for impossible things, however well we seem to work together.
Actually, Demeter, I say in the most nonchalant tone I can manage, could you give us another moment?
Demeter turns away with one last sympathetic look at me. I turn to Alex and draw breath, my heart hammering. So, I don't know how you saw things working out between us, but... You know, I force a bright, carefree smile. We'll both probably find different paths from now on. So, no hard feelings. It was fun, wasn't it?
Oh, Alex seems a bit discomfited. I see. Got it.
I mean, New York's a long way away. I give a breezy laugh. You'll be busy? I'll be busy.
Yes. I mean, I had thought... He trails off and shakes his head as though dispelling an uncomfortable thought. But... Okay. Right. Understood.
So... I clear my throat. That's... good. Sorted. There's an awkward silence in the office. I breathe out a few times, my gaze distant, trying to keep my cool. I feel a bit like giving myself a high five for sorting my life so efficiently, and a bit like bursting into tears.
I'm not going for a week or two, says Alex, eventually, in wary tones. I was actually going to ask if you wanted to come round to my flat tonight.
Right. I swallow, trying to maintain my indifferent demeanour and not give away how much I want him. It's not only the sex, or the way he makes me laugh, or his sudden, random, always entertaining ideas. It's the sharing, the confiding, the peeling away the layers of him, which is, I guess, how I ended up letting him into my heart. And so, really, I should say, no, let's end it here. But I'm not quite that strong.
Well, okay, I say at last. That might be fun. Just fun, I add for emphasis. Fun.
Absolutely. Just fun.
Alex seems about to say something else when his phone rings. As he pulls it out of his pocket, he winces at the display.
Sorry. Do you mind if I...
Of course. Go ahead.
The interruption is exactly what I need to get my thoughts in order and stiffen my inner resolve. I walk over to the window, my chin set, talking firmly to myself. Okay. This is what it is. It's fun. It's an interlude, and I'm going to enjoy it simply as that. Repeat. Life is good at the moment.
No, it's brilliant. And when Alex disappears out of the picture again, it will not throw me. Because the thing about letting people into your heart is, you can just push them out again. Easy.
Chapter 23. I've called it At My Not-So-Perfect Life, and I've already got 267 followers. I post utterly unvarnished, unposed, un-Instagrammy photos with captions, and it's turned into one of the most fun hobbies I've ever had. A photo of bad-tempered crowds on a tube platform, my not-so-perfect commute, a picture of the revolting blister on my heel, my not-so-perfect new shoes, a photo of my hair drenched, the not-so-perfect London weather. The amazing thing is how many other people have joined in. Mark from work posted a picture of himself eating a donut, captioned, my not-so-perfect eat clean regime. Biddy posted a picture of some ripped trousers, which she'd obviously caught on some barbed wire, entitled, my not-so-perfect rural existence, which made me laugh. Even Steve's fiancée, Kayla, has posted a picture of a receipt for the deposit on a tent, £3,500. She called it, my not-so-perfect wedding. And I'm really hoping that Steve knows all about it and sees the joke too. Fee has deluged my page with photos from New York, and to be honest, it's totally changed the way I see her and her life. For a start, I hadn't quite realized how small her apartment was. She's posted lots of pictures of her shower, which I have to admit is really unappealing, all captioned, my not-so-perfect New York rental. Then she posted a photo of a text message that some guy sent her, dumping her as she arrived for their date. She could actually see him at the bar chatting up another girl. She called that one, my not-so-perfect New York date, and got about 30 responses from people with even worse stories. After Fee had posted about 6 times, I called her up, and we had a bit of a heart-to-heart. In fact, it lasted all evening. I hadn't realized how much I'd missed her voice. Words on a screen just aren't the same. And it's not as if she said, guess what, my fabulous life was all made up. I haven't really got quirky friends, nor do I drink pink margaritas in the Hamptons. Because she has got quirky friends, and she did drink pink margaritas in the Hamptons. At least once. But there's other stuff in her life, too. Stuff that balances out the bright and shiny, just like there is for all of us. Bright and shiny on the one side, the crappy truth on the other. I think I finally worked out how to feel good about life. Every time you see someone's bright and shiny, remember, they have their own crappy truths, too. Of course they do. And every time you see your own crappy truth and feel despair and think, is this my life? Remember, it's not. Everyone's got a bright and shiny, even if it's hard to find sometimes. Katie? I raise my head and smile. There's my bright and shiny right in front of me, at least 2 big chunks of it. Dad and Biddy have come into the kitchen, dressed up in their visiting London outfits. They're both wearing stiff blue jeans, Dave Yarnett, and gleaming white sneakers. Dave Yarnett. Dad has a new I Heart London t-shirt, which he bought yesterday at the Tower of London, while Biddy's wearing a sweatshirt with Big Ben on it. Dad's holding the tube map, and Biddy's clutching a flask of water. They're going to Kew Gardens today, and I think they'll love it. They promised me they'd come to stay after I'd had time to settle in, and I thought they meant in the autumn, after the season was over. But I'm only 6 weeks into my new job, and here they are, leaving Steve and Denise in charge of the glampers for a couple of days. It must have meant heroic amounts of organisation, and I'm truly appreciative. The only snag is, I haven't been able to take time off work, but they insist that they don't mind. This way they can enjoy London, as they keep putting it. Dad has told me about 5 times how he's been finding London extremely enjoyable, this visit, and how he never really looked at it the right way before. I smile at them. All ready? Biddy nods. All set. Goodness, you do have an early start, darling. Then she stops herself, flushes, and glances at Dad. I think Biddy and Dad must have made a joint vow on this visit. We will not utter one single, even slightly negative opinion. I can tell they think my new bedroom is a little small. They should have seen the last one. And they think my commute is a bit long. I think it's a picnic. But all they've done since they arrived is shower me with positive comments about London, Londoners, jobs in offices, and basically everything about my life.
"Handy window," comments Dad now, looking at my nondescript little kitchen window. "Makes the kitchen very light."
"Very nice," chimes in Biddy eagerly. "And I noticed you have a Japanese restaurant at the end of the road. Very exotic, very glamorous. Isn't it, Mick? That's what you get in London? The restaurants?"
I want to give Biddy a hug. My little road in Hanwell is not exotic, nor glamorous. It's well-priced and the commute is half what I had before, and there's room for a sofa bed. Those are the main attractions of my flat, as well as not having to share with weirdo flatmates. But if Biddy's going to call it exotic and glamorous, then I can too.
The truth is, Biddy and Dad will never see or feel or understand the Londonness that gives me a spring in my step. Every single day. It's intangible. It's not about being glossy, and it's not about trying to live up to an image. It's about who I am. I love Anser's Farm, and I always will. And who knows, maybe one day I'll end up back there. But something about this life I'm leading now makes me feel super alive. The people, the buzz, the horizons, the connections. Like, for example, I'm having a meeting with some people at Disney this afternoon.
Disney?
Okay, full disclosure, it's not really my meeting. Demeter and Adrian are having the meeting, but they said I could come along. Still, I'll be meeting the Disney people, won't I? I'll be learning, won't I? I check my reflection in the mirror and run a last-minute dollop of serum through my curls. I'm doing London differently this time, more confidently. I'm not trying to be a girl with straight, tortured, unfamiliar hair. I'm being me. So, let's go. I pick up my bag and usher Dad and Biddy out of my flat, through the little communal hall, out of the main front door, and to the top of the steps. Yes, I have steps. They aren't quite as grand as Demeter's steps, and she's right, they are a pain to lug shopping up. But they're grey stone and kind of almost elegant, and every time I open the front door in the morning, they give me a spark of joy.
Nice, bus stop, says Dad, gesturing ahead. Very handy, love.
He looks up as though to check I'm listening, and I feel a tweak of love for him. He's praised everything in this street, from the houses to the scrubby trees to the bench outside the newsagents. Now he's reduced to admiring the bus stop. It's useful, I agree. Cuts my travelling time down. Let's not mention the bus fumes or the crowds of school children who use it. As the bus draws up, it's a bit of a scrum, and by the time we're all inside, I've ended up separated from Dad and Biddy. I gesture reassuringly at them and take the opportunity to check a text which just beeped in my phone.
Hi, Katie. How's it going? Jeff.
I blink at it for a moment. Jeff is this guy that I've dated, like, twice. We met at a conference, and he's polite, nice-looking, nondescript. No, not nondescript. Quickly I steer my own thoughts onto a strictly positive, upbeat path. Wow, Jeff texted. We've only dated a couple of times, so this is a sweet gesture of his, to check in like that. It's nice of him. Really, really nice. Considerate. He's a really considerate guy, in fact. It's a really good quality of his, being considerate. This is my new guiding principle. Find a man of quality. Not a man who excites me, but one who values me. Not a man who takes me to the moon and then vanishes off to New York, but one who takes me to Bracknell, maybe. Jeff is from Bracknell and keeps telling me how great it is. Well, okay. Obviously the moon would be even better than Bracknell, but maybe Jeff will take me to the moon. I just need to get to know him. I text a reply. Hi, Jeff. How are you? As I'm typing, I have a sudden flashback to a memory which I must not keep having. It was just before I moved in here, and Alex left for New York, and I texted him from a very dull residence meeting in my upstairs neighbor's flat. Help, I'm surrounded by biscuit people.
He started sending me photos of all sorts of biscuits. Then he started photoshopping them with faces. And I got the giggles, and I felt that glow, that warmth, that you-and-me feeling he gives me. But the you-and-me feeling is a mirage, I tell myself sternly. A mirage. Let's look at the facts. Alex is in New York on his one-way lifelong spree around the world. I haven't heard a word from him, whereas Jeff is here, in Bracknell, actually being interested in my life. To be fair to Alex, he didn't break off contact, I did. More self-preservation. Really, I should have broken off the whole affair that day in Demeter's office when he first told me about New York. But I was weak. I couldn't resist a night in his flat, and then another night, and another. So we had these golden, heady few days, spending time with each other and being in the moment. I didn't dare to peer into the future. I didn't dare think too hard about things. We cast the whole thing as fun. We both used that word a lot until it started sounding hollow, where other people might tentatively have talked about love or connection or a relationship. We resolutely pitched the word fun at each other. I've been having so much fun.
You're so much fun.
That evening was just fun. A couple of times I caught him looking at me uncertainly, as though he sensed the element of charade, catching my hand, taking it to his lips. A couple of times I couldn't resist sweet, small murmurings into his neck, which sounded closer to love than fun. But the word love, even uttered in my mind, made me jolt in alarm. No, 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 don't fall. Protect yourself. He'll be off. He'll leave you. And he was. And he did.
Look, Katie, you don't mind me going, do you?
Alex said once as we lay together, as though the thought was slowly dawning on him.
I mean, this has been fun. This is fun, but...
Mind? And I laughed, an incredulous, bubbling, carefree laugh. I could have got an Oscar for it. Oh, just jogging along. The beep of Jeff's text brings me out of my thoughts. This is reality, I remind myself. Jeff is reality. Alex is gone. A memory. A myth. I try to think of some witty response to jogging along, but the very phrase seems to dull my fingers. Jogging along. Oh, God. Very slowly, I begin to type. Sounds. I have literally no idea what to say next. Sounds what? Sounds super fun? Sounds like my idea of hell? And now, despite myself, I'm remembering another painful, magical Alex moment. It was a night that we had martinis, and Alex suddenly announced, only a little drunkenly,
I do admire you, Katie Brenner. I do so admire you.
Admire me? I felt my jaw sag. No one had ever admired me before. What on earth?
You're tough, and you're...
He seemed to search for the word.
You're straight. You fought for Demeter because you thought it was right. You didn't have to fight for her. In fact, you had every reason not to. But you did.
Actually, I was a mercenary, I replied with a shrug. Did I never tell you that? Made 5 grand. Result... And Alex laughed and laughed until Martini came out of his nose. I could always manage to tickle him. I'm not even sure how. I remember that we lapsed into silence then, and I gazed at him while jazz played in the background and soft lights danced on his face. And although I knew full well in one part of my head that he was planning to leave, right at that moment it seemed impossible that he wouldn't always be there with me, entertaining me with his random comments and impulsive plans, an infectious smile. I just couldn't compute the idea of him gone. Head over head, I guess. Thankfully, we've arrived at the bus stop where we need to change. So I'm able to quit this train of thought, shake my head clear of old memories and hopes and whatever else rubbish is in there.
I put my phone away and shepherd Dad and Biddy through the whole fight-your-way-through-the-school-kids process. I can see it from their point of view. It is a bit stressy. Although I will say, they're both getting very good at tapping their Oyster cards. The second bus whizzes along straight to Chiswick. Well, as much as you can whiz in London. And there's summer sunlight glinting in through the window, and Biddy even gets a seat. It really could be worse. At Turnham Green, I put Dad and Biddy on a tube to Kew, tell them I can't wait to hear all about it later, and then walk briskly the rest of the way to Cooper Clemo. "Morning, Katie," Jade greets me from the reception as I walk in. That's another change I've made. I'm Katie these days, and I don't know why I ever tried being anyone else. "Morning, Jade," I smile back. "Is the meter in?" "Not yet," says Jade, and I'm about to head to the lift when she clears her throat and motions towards someone sitting in the reception area. I turn and blink a few times as I see the figure, feeling a sudden rush of emotions. It's me, okay? It's not me, but it's like looking at myself. Sitting there, fiddling with her handbag strap, is our new research associate, Carly. She's wearing cheap black trousers and her hair in a plastic clasp and an anxious expression. As she sees me, she leaps up, practically knocking over her glass of water. "Hoy," she says breathlessly. "Hoy, Katie, isn't it? We met at my interview. I wanted to get here early on my first day, so... Hoy." She looks so apprehensive, I want to give her a hug, except that would probably freak her out. "Hoy," I shake her hand warmly. "Welcome to Cooper Clemo. You're going to love it here. The meter's not here yet, but I'll get you settled in. How was your commute?" I add as we head toward the lift. "Miserable?" "Not too bad," says Carly robustly. "I mean, I'm in Wembley, so... But it's not too bad." "I know what it's like," I catch her eye. "Truly," she nods. "Yes, I know. I've seen your Instagram page. My not-so-perfect commute," she gives a sudden, nervous half-giggle. "And all the other photos. They're brilliant. They're really... real." "Well, yes," I smile. "That's the idea." As we head into the airy office space, I can see Carly looking around wide-eyed at the distressed bricks, the naked man coat stand, the amazing giant plastic flowers that have just arrived from Sensequo. "It's so cool," she breathes. "I know." I can't help catching her enthusiasm. "It's pretty good, isn't it?" We had some kids over from the Catford Community Centre last week. We set up an outreach day to complement our fundraising efforts. And they were fairly impressed by the office too. Even Sadiqa was, though she tried not to show it, and asked everyone she met, "Can you get me on reality TV? 'Cause I want to be a presenter." That girl is going to go far. I have no idea in which direction, but she'll go far. "So," I add as we reach Carly's desk, "I can't remember, sorry. Where are you from originally?" "The Midlands," she says, a touch defensively. "A place near Corby. You wouldn't have heard of it." She eyes up my print shift dress, which I bought when I got my first month's salary. "So, are you a Londoner? You don't sound like a Londoner. Are you?" She wrinkles her brow. "West Country?" I haven't tried to lose my accent this time round. I'm proud of it. My accent's part of me, like Dad and Mum, and the farm, and the fresh country milk that's made my hair so strong and curly. That's what Dad always said anyway, to get me to drink up. It was probably bollocks. I am what I am. I'm just sorry it took me so long to realise it. "I'm a Somerset girl, through and through," I smile at Carly. "But I live in London now, so... I guess I'm both." Demeter's out at meetings all morning, so I keep an eye on Carly. She looks okay, but I know what it's like to be that new girl putting a brave face on. So at lunchtime, I head to her desk. "Come for a drink," I say. "We're all going to the Blue Bear. Give you a chance to get to know everyone." I can read her emotions like a book, a flash of delight, then hesitation. She glances at the homemade sandwich in her bag, and instantly I know... she's worried about money. "On the company," I say at once. "All on the company.
It's a thing we do.
We'll sort it later, Demeter and Liz and me. I'm quite friendly with Liz these days, now that the axis of evil has left.
On the way to the pub, I text Demeter, telling her about our plans. She says she's on her way, then texts back a picture of a vintage typeface she's just seen. What do you think?
I send back an enthusiastic reply, and we ping back and forth a few times.
We talk a lot by text message, Demeter and I. In fact, we talk a lot full stop. Most evenings, the pair of us will be the only ones left in the office, making herbal teas, talking over some issue or other. Once we even order Chinese food, just like in my old fantasy. We crack stuff, we work out solutions. To be fairer, it's often Demeter working out the solution, and me listening avidly, thinking, oh my God, I get it. I was always trying to learn from Demeter, but I only had scraps to work with. Now I'm exposed to the full Demeter creative mindset, and it's great. No, it's amazing. Don't get me wrong, Demeter still has her flaws. She's tricksy and unpredictable, and the most disorganized woman on the planet, but bloody hell, am I picking up a lot. Then sometimes when I'm in her office, we'll relax a little and move on to family stuff. I'll tell her the news from Anster's farm and hear the latest gossip from the Wilton household. James's job in Brussels is working out well, and they're loads happier, apparently. In fact, seeing him only once a week has its advantages, Demeter added. She didn't spell out what the advantages are, but I can imagine. Coco has a boyfriend, and Hal wants to take up cage fighting, which Demeter is fiercely opposing. Cage fighting, I mean. Cage fighting, Katie. What's wrong with fencing?
I even went to supper with the family one midweek evening in their amazing house in Shepherd's Bush. It was lovely. Both Coco and Hal were on best behaviour, and they'd made a lemon pudding as a joint effort. We sat round a reclaimed oak table with diptyque candles scenting the air, and the cutlery was some special French kind, and even the loo was like something out of a magazine, hand-printed wallpaper and a vintage basin. And I might have started sinking back into the belief that Demeter's life was perfect if Coco hadn't shrieked, "Oh!" from the kitchen, and we hadn't all rushed in and seen that the puppy had been ill all over the floor. Coco wanted to win Best Not So Perfect Life for the photo of the mess, which she posted on my Instagram page. Nice. As we approach the Blue Bear, I see Demeter coming from the opposite direction, wearing her new leather jacket and looking very impressive as she taps on her phone. "Hi, Demeter," I greet her. "You remember Carly, our new research associate?"
"Hello, welcome,"
Demeter shakes Carly's hand and flashes her that slightly intimidating smile, and I can see Carly gulp. Demeter is quite a daunting prospect if you don't know her, although not so much if you've seen her face down in the mud, wearing a sack. In the Blue Bear, we order 3 bottles of wine and hand out glasses, congregating around a couple of high bar tables. And I'm just wondering whether Demeter should make a little welcoming speech to Carly, or whether she'll feel too conspicuous, when the door to the street opens and there's a bit of a gasp, and I hear someone saying, "Alex? Alex? Alex?" My throat constricts, and very slowly I turn. It's him. It's Alex. He's wearing a slightly crumpled linen jacket, and his hair is disheveled, and he hasn't shaved. He fixes his gaze instantly on me, and I feel something lurch inside me.
"I know you said it was just fun," he says without preamble. "I know that, but..."
He shakes his head as though trying to sort his troublesome thoughts. Then he looks up again, his eyes dark, frank, without any playful spark. And as they meet mine, everything stops. I feel as though I've divined everything he wants to say at once in that one look. But I can't believe it. Can't let myself believe it. As we're staring wordlessly at each other, Alex sways slightly and grabs a bar stool for balance. "Are you okay?" I take a step forward in alarm.
"Haven't slept for a few days," he says. "I've been thinking. I didn't sleep on the flight either. Katie, I got things wrong. So wrong. Everything wrong."
He rubs his forehead and I wait silently. He looks a little devastated, a little desperate.
"I'm tired of darting and weaving," he says suddenly. "Spinning, constantly spinning. Never being still, never being grounded."
"I thought your dad was going to ground you," I say tentatively.
I thought your dad was your Moss.
Wrong Moss, he says, and his eyes delve into mine as though they never want to leave. Wrong Moss.
He seems to become aware of the gaping Cooper Clemo staff members all around.
Can we go somewhere quieter?
There isn't really anywhere quieter, but we edge a few feet away from the rest of the crowd. My heart is pounding. I feel almost light-headed. Where do we go with this? What is this? Has he flown back? For me? So, you didn't get on with your dad?
I say carefully. Fuck him. And all who fuck him, says Alex with a flippant gesture. But that's another story.
He shoots me a charming half-grin, but I can see pain in his face too. I wonder just what's been going on in New York these last few weeks, and I feel an unwarranted, irrational spike of fury toward Alex's dad. If he's hurt him, even a little bit.
Katie, I've finally realized. I don't want what you and your dad have. I want...
Alex breaks off, locking his eyes onto mine.
You.
At once, I feel my throat thickening. I thought I was on top of the situation, but I'm really not feeling on top of it right now. I'm feeling like I might dissolve.
All I've been thinking about is you, he presses on. All the time, you. No one else is funny like you, or wise like you.
You're very wise, you know that.
As well as having incredibly tough thighs, he adds, glancing at my legs. I mean, they're superhuman.
I open my mouth and close it. I don't know what to say.
Alex? No, wait. He lifts a hand. I haven't finished. That's what I want. And I was an idiot to leave. And I should have realized.
He interrupts himself.
Anyway, but I don't know if I can have you. And that's why I'm here. To ask you. If you say no, then I'll go away, but that's why I'm here. To ask you. I'm repeating myself, aren't I?
He adds matter-of-factly.
I'm nervous. This isn't my style. It's really not my style. Coming back.
I know, I say, my voice barely above a whisper. I heard.
So, yes, I'm nervous, and yes, I'm embarrassed right now, but you know what? I'm owning my embarrassment.
He finishes speaking into utter silence. Clearly everyone in the entire bar has surreptitiously stopped talking to eavesdrop on us. I glance up and catch sight of Demeter listening. Her hand is to her mouth as though in disbelief, and her eyes are a little sheeny.
I'm owning my embarrassment, Alex repeats,
apparently oblivious to the audience.
Here I am, Alex Astalis, in love with you. Owning that, too.
I'm tingling in shock. Did he just say he was in love with me?
But, of course, there are many, many reasons why this might not be a good idea,
he continues before I can reply.
And I wrote most of them down on the plane, just to torture myself.
He produces an airline sick bag with scrawled writing all over it.
And the one I kept coming back to was, all you ever wanted was fun. You told me that's what you wanted. And me turning up here like this, it's not fun, is it?
He takes a step toward me, his expression so agonized, so questioning, so quintessentially Alex, that I have to fight the urge to throw myself at him.
Is it? He repeats. Fun? This?
No, tears are shimmering in my eyes as I eventually manage to speak. It's not fun, it's us. It's whatever we are. And that's all I ever really wanted too. Not fun. Us.
Us.
Alex takes another step toward me.
That sounds good to me.
His voice is a little husky and hesitant.
That sounds like what I want.
Me too. I honestly can't speak anymore. My throat is clogged and my nose is prickling. I never did push him out of my heart. How do you push Alex out of your heart? And I'm frantically telling myself, we're in a public place. Behave with dignity. But then his face is a foot away, 6 inches away, and I inhale his scent and feel his strong arms around me. And, oh God, I'm lost. I'm pretty sure that kissing your boss in full public is against protocol. Although, is he my boss right now? Finally, we draw apart, and everyone's blatantly been watching us. Don't they have lives? As the hubbub starts up again, I glance over at Demeter
and she clasps her hands tightly, blows us both a kiss, then puts the tissue to her eyes, as though she's my fairy godmother.
Katie Brenner. Alex cups my face as though drinking me in. Katie Brenner. Why did I go to New York when I had you right here?
I can't believe you left me, I say, nestling into his jacket.
I can't believe you didn't stop me.
He kisses me again, long and deep, and I find myself calculating whether I can take the afternoon off. Special circumstances. Alex passes me a wine glass, and I clink with his and lean against his chest again. And something in me unwinds, something I didn't even realize was tense. I feel like, at last, at last, at last.
Katie Brenner, says Alex again, as though just saying my name makes him happy. So, let me take you out to dinner tonight. I never take you out to dinner, he frowns as though we're an old married couple. Where would you like to go?
I've got Dad and Biddy staying with me at the moment, I say, a little regretfully, but his face lights up.
Even better, family reunion. You do realize I'm only after you for Biddy's cooking.
Oh, I know, I laugh. I'm not stupid.
So, family supper, then back to mine and... see how it goes? Let's go somewhere really special.
His eyes are sparkling with enthusiasm. I can feel the happiness emanating from him. Somewhere really special? I eye him carefully. You mean that?
Absolutely, he nods. Somewhere really, truly, extraordinarily special. Is there anywhere you'd like to go?
Is there anywhere I'd like to go?
Hang on, I scrabble in my bag. Right at the bottom is my ancient handwritten list of restaurants, the one I've been carrying around all this time. Any of those, I point. That, or that, or this one, or that. Maybe there, not there. And this one, not sure.
Alex is staring at the list, a bit stunned, and I suddenly realize this is probably not how most girls react when they're asked out to dinner. Or anywhere, I amend hastily, crumpling the list. I mean, really, you choose. I'm sure you've got loads of good ideas.
Bollocks, I do, he grins. You're the expert. You choose.
Oh, I say, discomforted. But don't you want to... I mean, shouldn't the man...
Own it, Katie. He cuts me off. Enjoy it. You're choosing, okay? Over to you, my gorgeous Somerset girl.
He kisses my fingertips and pulls me close again, his voice soft in my ear.
You're the boss.
This is Fiona Hardingham. We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of My Not-So-Perfect Life by Sophie Kinsella. This program was directed by Kathy Thornburn. Executive producer, Orly Moskowitz. Text copyright 2017 by Mad Hen Media, LTD. Production copyright 2017, Penguin Random House, LLC. All rights reserved.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.